Okay, the A team's in. Go get it.
This is a follow up to your talk.
Good to see you. Thank you.
Mill whistle or the
5 o'clock whistle.
He leaves, so go. Welcome first.
Can you hear me?
No.
Son? Okay. I'll just get really close to this microphone so you can hear me. Thank you, commissioners, for your time today. My name is Laura Hieronymus, and I'm the Columbia River Sturgeon, Smelt, and Lamprey Unit Lead. And I'm joined here with Bill Thwaite, Special Assistant to the Director. So today we'll be presenting the Lower Columbia River Sturgeon Annual Review. This is an annual review every year. It is requested in the commission policy for the Lower Columbia Sturgeon Management to have this review. So just kind of general outline, we'll talk about what the policy guidance is, the status or the summary of the 2019 fisheries, the stock status of the population, some predation concerns, and what we're thinking for a 2020 fishery. So when discussing this population, we're really focusing on the population of sturgeon in the Columbia River downstream of Bonneville Dam. There are sturgeon upstream of Bonneville Dam, but they are not included as part of this presentation, just to clarify that. And the primary spawning portion of the population is in the lower Columbia. However, these fish do have access to the ocean and migrate along the coast and can be found in coastal Washington and Oregon tributaries, including Grays Harbor, Willapa Bay, and Puget Sound. But they all are managed as a single population primarily. And so this population is managed under the policy guidance, which is the first one on the commission website. And the goal is to provide consistent management guidelines that promote a healthy population and provide sustainable fisheries. And I've outlined what I thought were a few key conservation and fishery management objectives, though attachment two in your handout is the full commission policy. And then I just wanted to touch on the fact that the commission has delegated authority to the director to develop and negotiate Lower Columbia Sturgeon Management Accords with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife that are consistent with these policies and objectives that are found in the policy. So our recent management, let's see. The setline stock assessments showed a decline in our 38 to 54 inch fork length and juvenile size white sturgeon from 2010 to 2012. And in exercising a precautionary approach, both commissions placed a moratorium on recreational and commercial white sturgeon harvest in 2014. And the Columbia River downstream from Bonneville Dam, including the lower Willamette River and along the coast of both states and the associated bays and estuaries. So in all of those areas, catch and release fishing was still allowed. This closure had the immediate effect of escaping a sizable number of white sturgeon into the overlegal size class of fish and protected them from future harvest. At the same time, we saw a decrease in the number of angler trips as recreational sturgeon fisheries shifted to catch and release only. We did start to see an increase in subadult and adult white sturgeon in 2016, and in 2017, we worked with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to develop a limited white sturgeon harvest fishery in the Lower Columbia that was consistent with that reduced status of the population while still trying to meet our conservation objectives. So since 2017, or 2017, 18, and 19, we've had this limited recreational fishery, or recreational and commercial fishery. The total guideline going into 2019 was around 6,000 fish, and that was split 20% commercial and 80% sport via the commission policy. The sport is then further allocated into three areas: the Columbia River estuary, the Columbia River from around Wauna power lines up to Bonneville Dam, and then the Willamette River getting the third allocation. The Willamette River has not reopened since 2017 because that's a very low allocation overall. And so that is entirely within Oregon waters, and they felt they were unable to manage a fishery of that size. So the only fisheries that have opened were in the Columbia River estuary and then from Wauna to Bonneville. In 2019, we had a preseason expectation of 50-50 sharing between the select area and main stem fisheries. Select area was open in winter, spring, summer, and in fall for a total of 691 fish brought to market, which was about 58% of the harvest guideline for commercial. And in the main stem, there were a total of 509 fish brought to market, which was about 41%. Overall, harvest was 98% of the 2019 commercial guideline, around 1,200 fish out of 1,230. The sport fishery, like I said, was only open in the two areas, the estuary and then upriver Wauna to Bonneville. In the estuary, it was open for 11 retention days in May and early June, and there were an estimated 22,000 angler trips in those 11 days. This brought in a total of 2,838 harvested fish, or about 96% of that estuary's guideline. From Wauna to Bonneville, it was open in late September through October for 5 total days, with about 12,000 angler trips reported, and only 685 fish, or about 56% of the guideline, was harvested. That one, the fishery just kept getting slower and slower, and there weren't very many being caught, and we basically were getting to a point where it became difficult to continue managing the fishery. So we did open it earlier, and that it's kind of tricky in the fall there. Total harvest for that area was, or for sport fishing, was 3,523 fish, which is 71% of the total sport guideline. But if you consider just the open areas in the Columbia, that was about 84% of what was actually open for recreational fisheries. So in total, we saw an estimated 37,700 trips for retention and catch and release fisheries in 2019.
The harvest guidelines are Washington fishers only, and you work with Oregon and they develop their guidelines, or is it split?
Both.
So thank you for your question. We generally work together for all of those. So we would set a harvest rate on the legal portion of the population. We come up with what the overall guideline is, and then the share is allocated into these different areas in both Washington and Oregon. Anglers can fish, and we co-manage that fishery. So we have samplers on both sides of the river and work together to creel it.
That's
both Oregon. Washington and Oregon anglers. Yes.
Got a question with regard to how you or what kind of seasons. You mentioned 11 days from May 13 to June 5. Is it like every other day, or is it like a couple days over a weekend? How is that structured?
So we've been using this days per week approach in the estuary, which is Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday. And that provides some opportunity throughout the week while also giving us the chance to evaluate the creel, look at the number harvested, and be able to take the approach of closing the fishery early if we feel like we're going to go over the guideline.
And did the drop-off that you were describing occur in both of those locations similarly, or was it just kind of separate response?
So it's different in the different areas, and part of that has to do with the time of year that they're fished. The estuary has been traditionally fished that May to July period, and really the catch rates pick up substantially going into June and July. So the overall harvest guideline for that estuary area, if you were to fish it in July, would be less than one day fishing. So it pretty much just keeps increasing going into that time of year. So we've been starting it earlier in May to provide more days of opportunity while still trying to keep the total catch under that overall guideline. In the Juanita to Bonneville section, we've been traditionally fishing that more in the fall. And again, that's a lower total guideline. It's, I think, 1,200 fish in 2019. And so we tried starting that early a few years ago, and we went over the guideline. Like, and when I say early, I mean the first 2 weeks in September. So then we went into October the year after that, and then we couldn't fish the guideline. And so this year we tried the middle, and we tried late September going into early October. And again, like, just the weather is very variable. And so once you start getting into October, it starts cooling off and the bite slows down. And I think that a lot of our fishermen kind of switch over to hunting and other activities at that time of year. So there's just a lot less effort once we get into later October. So generally that one just kind of simmers off.
Thank you.
I did also quickly summarize for myself here the angler trips and how that's changed. So I didn't put it on a slide because this was like 15 minutes ago that I thought of this. But the total number of trips, just to think about, from 2009 to 2013 for both catch and release and retention fisheries was just shy of 70,000 angler trips per year. And in 14 through 16, when it was closed to retention, that dropped to about 3,500 angler trips per year. And then once we reopened it, the total trips in 17 through 2019 jumped back up to about 32,500 angler trips a year. So having, even though it was only 16 days in 19, and I think that it's around 13 to 16 days for all 3 years, has not quite brought us back to the number of angler trips before, but it is certainly impacting quite a lot of people to have the opportunity to go out and fish those few days. So getting into our stock status of the population, there's three big size classes that I'm going to refer to throughout the presentation, and those are our juvenile fish. Those are fish less than 38 inches in fork length, and that's what's highlighted in yellow. Our legal size fish, 38 to 54 inches, and that was actually the legal slot prior to closing the fishery. I do have in there what the current legal slot is. We actually cut that back down when we reopened it under much tighter guidelines in 2017. But we like to use that old legal size so we can compare apples to apples when we're looking at the population growth through time. And then I have this adult size class, and so that's anything over 65 inches. Those are what we're considering most of the fish by this size are mature spawning fish. And you'll see there's kind of an ignored section there. Those are over legal size, but many of those fish are not quite spawning fish yet. So it's still important to move them out of the legal size, but they're not going to be discussed too much in detail here. So I'll start with the trends in our legal abundance. Those are those 38 to 54-inch fork-length fish. We use mark recapture methods to tag and recapture these fish. And what I have here, the blue lines are our actual estimated abundance each year, and the red dots are the previous year's projection. And so you can see that as we go through time, we're usually pretty close on our projections, and sometimes we get a little high or low. These fish are notoriously difficult to predict because they live a long time, they have access to the ocean, and freshwater and marine environments can change their distribution, so that can impact our ability to predict. But I think overall we do a pretty good job of following our projections going into the next year. So going into 2019, we projected just a little lower than where we actually ended up. So we did pretty well hitting where we expected to be based on our harvest guideline. And we look at the stock assessment a couple different ways just to kind of understand if we're in the right ballpark. So this graph is showing our trends in our legal catch per effort, so the number of sturgeon caught per set line. And generally, that's increasing through time with a little bit of a drop-off in 2019, which is pretty consistent with our stock assessment results. So we do feel like we're getting pretty similar results between different analyses. So now I'll jump to our adult sturgeon abundance. These are the fish greater than 65 inches in fork length. And so what you see up here are the conservation status and the desired status. These actually come out of Oregon's conservation management plan for Lower Columbia sturgeon. The goal here, and so this is the three-year average of the adult abundance. The adult sturgeon over 65 inches are very difficult to capture, and so a single year might not have a lot of fish handled, so we average it over 3 years in order to smooth out that variability in our catch estimates, and we get a little bit better of a trend through time. And so what we've seen is just an increase in the number of adults through time, really coinciding with the closure of that fishery. You see, even after we opened it again, we decreased the overall slot. We cut back the overall harvest rate pretty significantly, and we're successfully growing that adult portion of the population. So for the first time in 2019, that mean estimate for adults has crossed the threshold into that desired status, according to the Oregon plan. So this is all pretty promising that we're accomplishing one of our main goals here with the population. So I equate this to building the principal balance in your bank account, right? So as long as we have these long-lived adults, we have the potential to have more fish in the future.
Not to throw water on that, but the error bars are fairly large. Is that the fact that it's average and then the small numbers that are caught and that's what makes for such large error?
Yeah, it has to do with the small sample sizes. These fish over 65 inches, they have a tendency to straighten our hooks and avoid getting caught. So they can be very difficult to capture, and I think that they're pretty long-lived. They're smarter than we give them credit for, and they learn to avoid our gear, too. So we don't get a lot of recaptures of these fish, but we know that they're out there, and we do handle them. So there are in some years, bigger error bars than in others, but you can see generally the trend is pointing upwards. So even if that number is not quite precise on the desired status yet, I think that the overall upward trend is pretty promising. And that was part of the reason we do that three-year average of those adults instead of just 1 year at a time. I think that can be a little misleading. So again, looking at this in terms of the catch per unit effort, and I'm sorry, I forgot to change the title on this slide. That should be the catch per unit effort. So that's the number of adults caught per set line. You can see that that's also generally increasing through time. So you'd think, generally, if there are more fish out there, we would catch more of them. So it's not perfect, but it's another way of just kind of checking our numbers here and saying, yeah, we're seeing pretty similar trends between different ways of looking at it. So now I'm going to jump to our babies in the population, the age zeros. So the top figure is the Lower Columbia River. This is our number of young of year sturgeon caught per net set. And we do gill netting in the fall to evaluate that year's new cohort. And so in the past, we've had some really strong showings, but in the last few years since 2017, we haven't really seen another strong cohort. One of the big takeaways here is that we are seeing some spawning every year that we've looked. So that's really great. Worldwide, if you look at sturgeon populations, most are not reproducing on an annual basis, and that's part of the conservation concern with most populations. So the fact that we are getting at least measurable recruitment annually shows that there is some promise in the population, but again, it's not as high as what we'd like to see. On the flip side, in the Willamette River, so first of all, don't directly compare these numbers. The Willamette River is like a stamp compared to the Columbia River. So they're not directly comparable, but in the Willamette River, they are seeing pretty high numbers of young of year caught there. In recent years, 2019 was considered their third highest year of young of year catch. So there is some theories about maybe sturgeon are moving into other areas to spawn, and I'm going to get into that next with some of my predation concerns slides. So we do have some data on pinniped activity related to sturgeon. The top figure here is showing the median daily abundance of pinnipeds at Bonneville Dam. And so those are the pinnipeds that are being observed like from the dam down about a quarter mile. And what you see is early on in the early 2000s, it was primarily California sea lions. Then we worked on that program, started removing Californias, and Stellars moved into the area, and we saw more Stellar sea lions. And as Stellars first moved in, we saw a spike in the number of sturgeon that were being eaten. And so that's that bottom figure. You see a big spike right when the Stellars move in. A lot of sturgeon are eaten, and then it declines. And I think the wrong way to interpret this would be to say that they have stopped eating sturgeon, because they probably are. So keep in mind that this is just right at Bonneville Dam. So we don't really know what's happening throughout the rest of the lower Columbia River, where we don't have observational data. But the other way to interpret this is that, like I said, sturgeon are smarter than we give them credit for, and they see that they're being predated on, and they move. And so we're seeing higher numbers of young of year caught in the Willamette River. And I've also had anglers calling me and telling me that they're seeing more large sturgeon in the Cowlitz River and in other areas. So just the displacement of other sturgeon may be impacting recruitment. This past year, Oregon's biologist, Peter Stevens, he actually ran an analysis here looking at the number of Stellar sea lions and our young of year catch rates, and found that there was a significant correlation between those two things. And so essentially, the more sea lions that are available, the fewer young of year we're catching in our nets. So again, there's displacement. There could be stress if they're chasing after sturgeon. There could be direct predation. There's a number of reasons that this could be occurring. But I think that it does highlight that the pinnipeds are likely having a pretty big effect on our young of year recruitment. So that brings me to kind of the sad part of the story, and that is that our population composition isn't as great as we'd like it to be. So what this graph is showing in the blue is our juvenile portion of the population, and yellow is non-juveniles. And what we'd like to see, and again, these conservation and desired status come out of the Oregon plan, we'd like to see that blue bar all the way up to 95% of the population that would be desired, or at least over 60%. And just this past year, the number of juveniles has dropped to about 52% of the population. So we're not seeing the recruitment that we'd like to see, and they're not surviving as well as we'd like to see. So this is a little bit concerning for us. Remember that sturgeon are really long-lived, and so they have life history characteristics that allow them to overcome these kind of issues. So I don't think that this is in any means that the population is in danger or anything, but it is a concern that we are hoping that some of the future work with Stellar sea lions might help to address. So getting into what this might mean for the population in the future, this is our legal abundance forecast and kind of what we use for looking at the potential for future fisheries. So looking forward from 2019, I've plotted three lines here. The green line is if there's no harvest at all. The orange is a 3% harvest projection, and red is 5%. And the reason we use 3 and 5% is because that's the range that we've been targeting our fisheries since 2017, is that 3 to 5% range. It was about 3.8% is where we ended up. I don't know where that came from the first year, because 2017 I wasn't here, but there was some negotiation, I think, on exactly where that was between Washington and Oregon. And as we've moved forward, we've kind of kept that moving forward. And that's the broodstock equivalent. So we're looking at specifically what's impacting that legal slot that we're actually harvesting at, too. So the big thing to take away is that there's not a huge difference here between no harvest and 3 to 5%. It's very little difference. And that there is going to be a little bit of decline going into 2020. I think that that's a direct result of there being fewer juveniles in the population to move up into that slot limit. But like I said, I don't think the population is in any danger, and I think that that gives us that little bit of room to maintain that connection to the resource at that 3 to 5% without overall harming the population. So you can see it kind of come up and back down again into the future. The further out you project, the more unsure we are. But we do get to do these stock assessments every year on the population, so we'll get to see if we set or don't set our fishery, what the plan is, how it responds. So in summary, our illegal abundance has been pretty stable. Stable going into 2018, maybe a little lower than our 2016-17 abundance, but our CPUE is still trending generally upward, so we feel like it's still sufficient for a harvestable surplus. Our adult portion of the population is moving up, trending upward into that desired status, so we are meeting some of our conservation goals there. The population structure with that 52% juvenile is a little bit concerning and indicates some population productivity issues. And so that's something that we want to continue monitoring and understand as the sea lion program takes off. Our recruitment index in the lower Columbia was about 0.33, so less than one catch per net, or one sturgeon per net, but still, we are seeing some recruitment. And in the Willamette, it was the third highest ever in the Willamette. So we're not really sure what the overall contribution of those two areas are to the overall population. But it is not quite green yet because it's not as high as we'd like to see. Sea lion predation, we gave that a red. There's lower predation observed at Bonneville. However, we don't know what's happening in the rest of Lower Columbia. I get pictures and videos from anglers pretty regularly of sea lions being predated on in the main stem. And there was a correlation developed between the abundance of stellar sea lions at Bonneville and our low recruitment numbers. So we do think that this is a problem.
Thank you. You mentioned earlier about the adaptation of perhaps of sturgeon to other locations away from Bonneville. Has there been any effort or have you given consideration to changing survey protocols or additional survey work to get a better feel for that? And to what extent could some of that information make a change on the status matrix here?
So thank you for that question. That's a good question. We do actually do our set lines throughout most of the lower river and into the lower Willamette. And so it's pretty broadly distributed, but as if you recall, those large 65-inch or greater fish are very difficult to sample. And additionally, we don't have the funding currently to do any spawning surveys in the lower Columbia to evaluate their distribution during the spawning period or see if spawning is actually occurring in other areas. I'm very interested in that question myself, and I've been trying to come up with ways that within our current budget we can look at that. But we do spread out our stock line or set line stock assessment survey so that we would hopefully, you know, capture kind of the broad range of where those fish are occurring. But there's not high enough catch rates to really tell from that data at this time.
Yes. Can you go to slide 5? Thank you, by
the way. Really good presentation. Slide 5, please. You know, I'm remembering all of our former commissioners, and Commissioner Mankin comes to mind here. Actually, I'm sorry, it's on slide 10. I'm looking at different numbers. Slide 10. So, you know, we're concerned in the adults. Those are the baby producers, right? So my question is, are we starting to see some of those in the white columns shift into the green area? I mean, it's hard to tell, but I think, you know, the later slides with the trends in the adult sturgeon abundance suggest that, but I just wanted to get your read on whether we're starting to really see more of a shift of the population into the green area.
Sure, and I'll point you to attachment 1, figure 7, and there's, I think it's page 5 in the attachment. There shows this figure for every year going back to 2010, so you can kind of see the change in that structure through time. And so what you'll see is that, you know, early on there were a lot of juveniles in the population, but we did not have a large number of adults. And then you can see going into 2018 and 2019, although it still makes up a small portion of the population, there are slightly larger bars into the adult portion of the population, but unfortunately we're also seeing a lot fewer bars of the juvenile portion of the population. So what we'd like to see is 95% of the population to be juveniles. That would mean that we're pumping out a lot of new fish every year and maintaining that fishery. That type of population would be a little more healthy and able to handle changes in the river. I'm not explaining that very well, but
oh yeah, you are. And as I recall too, part of the problem with the sea lions and seals is kind of a harassment of the older population, right? The adults, and that could affect their ability to reproduce.
Right.
In addition to predation on the juveniles, right? So you got a double-edged sword there.
So they have been observed eating 8-foot sturgeon. The Stellar sea lions, they team together and take down pretty big sturgeon. It could cause stress, which stress during the spawning period can cause an adult female sturgeon to resorb those eggs and not spawn at all, which in some cases may be stressful enough to kill the fish. And it could also be habitat displacement. So if they're moving into areas with poor habitat quality, for example, for sturgeon, the Cowlitz River, which is very silty, is not very great for sturgeon eggs. They're adhesive, they're tiny, they get smothered by the silt in the Cowlitz. They're not made to spawn in that kind of substrate. Then they could be trying to spawn there and just not being successful. So, and on top of that, like you mentioned, they could be eating juveniles, which would be even more difficult for us to observe. So there's a number of hypotheses, and I'm not going to point to one of those or tell you that that's definitely what's happening, but I think that there's a number of things that and could be a combination of all those factors that could be affecting our population here. But we overall are seeing a few more fish moving into that adult portion of the population, which, like I said, is like growing our balance. So if we can address some of these other issues, we have that there to rebuild the population to the future.
What's the largest sturgeon that you've captured in your survey? In feet, not meters.
When I was on the boat, 10 feet.
10 feet?
Yeah.
That's a big hook.
It did not. It was very, very pretty fish that had never been captured before. It didn't have any pit tags or any markings on it.
His time was up.
It's hard to imagine that a fish can go on. I mean, that fish was likely 80 to 100 years old and had never been captured, or at least not in our surveys to earn a pit tag.
Oh, I've been captured.
All right. We're getting rummy now.
I do have a few more slides if you'd like me to finish up, or...
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
We're just having so much fun.
We can call it there if you're... I mean, there's not much else. I guess I was just going to add that we did share this update with our advisors. The sport advisors expressed some conservation concerns, but generally supported another retention fishery similar to the structure of 2017 through 19 with that limited harvest rate. And the commercial advisors also expressed some conservation concerns, but agreed with the assessment and asked for a balanced approach to the commercial fishery, as in balance between main stem and select area fisheries. So next, we're planning to work with Oregon. We've already started communication on what that might look like if we were to set a 2020 fishery, and we're planning to develop another short-duration retention fishery similar to the last few years, targeting that low harvest rate, trying to continue building the population while providing some low level of sustainable fishing opportunity. So that was all I have. Thank you.
Oh, question. Such a cool fish. I really like sturgeon. And obviously a very popular sport fish. We see it now that we can open up a fishery in Lake Roosevelt. The East Siders get really excited about this as well. Through all the presentations, the annual presentations I've had, I always go to the Young of Year slide and chew my fingernails. Was around in 2014 when we made the decision to close, and I was looking at that slide. You know, where are these fish coming from to get to legal size? And it is sort of where we have the red or the orange. We use a lot of proxy measures, and I've heard you say for the second time, you gave your presentation on the above the Bonneville fish, and brought up the spawner surveys, which would be a little bit more direct measure, I think, to understand what's going on, or at least it would add information. So I'd just like to kind of put in my two cents that, if we can figure out how to do those, let's go to it. I think it would add a lot of valuable information to the conservation of this wonderful fish.
Mr. Anderson?
With regard to your slide, next steps, you mentioned working with ODF&W to develop another short-duration retention fishery. Is that include both recreational and commercial?
Yes.
So that's a term encompassing both aspects of the fishery?
Correct.
I wasn't sure.
Good job. You don't have to come back in the morning, Mark.
Thank you for leaving a little time for me at the end of the day.
Do you have two or three people that publicly comment? I see Bob Lake's name here, but I don't see Bob Lake. So, Butch Smith and Greg King.
What's the biggest sturgeon you've seen, Butch?
12.5 feet on TV. I got it on TV. BBS special.
Did it have hooks?
One. Mine. But after we let it go, I didn't. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, Commission. Butch Smith from the Owako Charter Association. Probably been doing this fishery at its infancy for at least the charter fleet and the explosion that happened down in the estuary back in the early 80s. We have a prime example, maybe not Bill Twite, but prime example of our all-star staff that we have. We are so lucky, and I'm just kidding about Bill. But it is, they need the recognition. Our state, I see a lot of rock throwing, and unfortunately, how hard all our staffs work. But we are lucky to have one of the best sturgeon staffs in the country, along with Oregon. So I'm here, and I support the season like we had last year. We also had a 2 p.m. closure also. I wanted to add that. I think that adds some assurity that we won't go over. We don't have a bunch of anglers doing double dipping, all that kind of stuff. It's a time of year where we can maintain control. Example, Commissioner Anderson, it was pretty rocking along the next weekend. I took my son and my grandson and a couple customers out catch and release on Father's Day weekend. We had over 60 fish caught by 10:30 with just a very few rods in the water. In fact, people were yelling uncle and wanting to go home. And so it can get out of hand real fast. And so that's why we want to keep that time frame. And, 22,000 anglers for 11 days is absolutely phenomenal in my area. It has that shot in the arm that we need down there, both sides. I have members from both sides of the river, also the sport fleet, the bait shops, the motels, all that stuff down there. We are a fishing community. That's what we are. There's no other way to sugarcoat it. And I appreciate the commission taking the chance a few years ago on opening it back up, but it's been a huge success. The other thing that you asked that I think we're missing out on because it's one of these politically not friendly, but there is a lot of different spawning going on, however not as pristine as where they spawn in the Columbia River. The one thing we don't have anymore, we went from test fishing with state boats and gill nets to the hook and line set lines, but you know, if Oregon would, you know, do a couple tests gillnet fishing in the Willamette River, I think we'd find that's where a lot of our year the young are hanging out. They go in there, the water warms up the fastest there, so they go in there. Anecdotally, fishermen are catching a proportionate amount of shakers in there, but it is the Willamette River, it is downtown Portland, and to put a net in there would just absolutely make people come unhinged. So and that's too bad, because we've had a shift because of the sea lion issue, and Laura is perfectly correct that, you know, these things haven't been around for 1.5 million years because they're stupid, and so we do have, you know, the Sandy, the Willamette, the Cowlitz, the Clackamas. We have big fish showing up and being caught there where they've never been caught in numbers they've catch. And actually in the estuary, at the heyday of fisheries, when it was a three fish limit, 3 to 72 inches, we would be lucky to catch maybe a dozen oversize a year. And that a year then was from May 1st until August 15th. We just yelled uncle and went salmon fishing. But now there's days that we catch 10 or 11 in a day. So it is looking bright for the oversized population. I don't think they spend as much time in the Bonneville area like they used to. I think they do what they got to do and get the hell out of there, and so they won't get eaten by sea lions. So anyway, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to speak. We do support, and we do thank the staff for all their hard work on this. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Butch, for coming up. Greg, you got the caboose.
Good afternoon, Commission. I want to say that it's about the same thing Butch has to say, except for my area around the mouth, the Cowlitz and up there. Thank you, Bill and Laura, for a great presentation. This is what we need. This is the kind of people, hardworking people, that are putting the time into this here. We had 12,000 angling hours in the Longview area, and we had 685 fish there, I think. The only thing, and I'm not trying to bust anybody's butt on this thing or anything like that. What I saw and what I heard was that in our area, there was some conflicting dates. The October 24th date, I mean, hunting season started, and there was a razor clam season, and, you know, what do I do? What do I do with the family, you know? I'm not complaining about the dates. I like the dates. I like it. It's just, can we get a little bit maybe earlier? Because like Laura said, it kind of, the season kind of, you know, went downhill. No, Larry?
No, I wasn't talking about you. But I might.
But anyway, you know, I love the season. I just, you know, like I said, the dates, if we could get them earlier out of the hunting season and, you know, and just kind of, I don't know. I heard some guys complaining. It wasn't me. And I like to hear that Loris had a little bit of information about the Cowlitz. I believe below the Toutle River, we get a lot of silting, and maybe sturgeon eggs don't hold up so good. But above the Toutle, where we have no silting at all, basically, unless like now we got 25,000 cubic feet per second in the Cowlitz, I believe that there's a nursery in there. We catch a lot of sturgeon up there. I mean, a lot compared to what you'd think we should be catching. But there are sturgeon populations up there. We had a sturgeon fishery there some years ago. They pushed a line up, and there was guys catching oversized sturgeons up at Barrier Dam. So there is a population in the Cowlitz and some in the Toutle. Now, how many, I don't know. You know, you guys, yeah. We need money to go do that, but don't forget about it. It's in there. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. I'm just grabbing this. I'm not...
I'm going to throw it at you.
Commissioner McKaysey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our notice says that we'd be providing some guidance on the delegation to set 2020 fisheries, as we have done the last couple of years. And so let me just, again, thank the staff for an excellent presentation. This sturgeon work goes back decades, and they've kept a very close watch on the fish. And the unknown iceberg in the ocean is always a question, but anyway, an excellent presentation. In one of their slides, they they're looking already at a short-duration fishery similar to last year, which we've delegated to the director to try to do again, and I would just endorse that, and to whatever extent that that could be done earlier so that the notice could get out to the participants, that would be a very good thing.
Okay. Anyone else?
Does anybody disagree with that?
Nope.
I have one.
Commissioner Baker.
This isn't on sturgeon. I'm apologizing in advance for our 7 a.m. big tent committee meeting in the morning. Nikki said, I can't cancel it, but what I did want to say, Nikki's bringing food, but not good food. Don't expect great food, but I don't.
What kind of food?
Not a great food.
Let's get specific.
Wait.
This is a lot of whining.
Yeah. What I want to say is that I don't think we should do 7 o'clock meetings on Saturday anymore, and so I'm just going to say that for now. Okay.
Okay. Anything else from anyone? To remind everybody, that our meeting starts tomorrow morning at 8:30, and we will have food somewhere. So, no objection, I move to adjourn. Thank you very much.
So, seriously,